From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the state of Texas, where political parties needed 50,000 signatures to get on this November's ballot. Texas is a state that is turning politically bluer, but the Green Party wants to make it turn greener. Republicans and Democrats got 50,000 signatures, so did the Libertarian Party. But as the Texas Tribune reports this morning, the Green Party got only about 500 signatures, and now Texas voters who want to cast ballots for Green Party candidates this fall will have to write in names. The Green Party's candidate for governor of Texas, Jan Richards, said that the party is trying to speak for people who don't already have a voice, and Richards explained that Greens are not just Democrats further left. In fact, the Green Party tends to bristle at comparisons with the Democratic Party. Jill Stein ran for president again in 2016, hoping to forge her way up the polls into debates. She went essentially nowhere in 2016, got just over 1% of the popular vote, less than a third of what the Libertarian ticket received. And the headlines for the Green Party this week haven't been great. Stein raised $7 million for a swing state recount from the presidential election. Most of the money has been spent long after chances for a recount ended. Stein had promised donors that they could help decide how to spend the money, but the remaining cash is still being spent on travel, media, and lawyers. All of which brings us to how the Green Party is trying to refocus on state and local races. Leading Green voices continue to explain they are not Democrats. They don't wish to run as Democrats. They want to provide alternatives. And while Democrats are working to win the 2018 midterms, Greens are trying to remind voters they can demand more. They can demand better. So let's talk about that this hour. Our guests in studio include Dave Sutliff-Adius, who is the co-chair of the Monroe County Green Party. Dave, nice to have you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us here.
Alex White is treasurer of the Monroe County Green Party and a former multiple candidate for mayor of Rochester on the Green Line. Alex, welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much.
And on the line with us is Mark Dunley, who is a Green Party candidate for New York State Comptroller. And Mark is, I think, one of the co-founders of the Green Party. Back in 1991, is that right?
That's correct, and I was actually also Jill Stein's campaign manager for about 4 months during the last presidential race.
So you've got, I'm sure, a lot to say on the state of state, local, national elections here. So let's do this here. Mark, since you can speak to this better than anybody, I'm sure some Greens think I'm unfairly characterizing what Jill Stein has done here with $7 million. She originally said she wanted to raise $2.5 million. She ended up with around $7 million. And the Daily Beast reported this week that about $2.3 was needed just to file for recount challenges in some of these swing states, $2.6 on lawyers, and that there's been travel expenses, media and otherwise. And I think some people are wondering, we're not going to have a recount. What are you doing with this? Why are you still traveling? Why are you still doing these media events? Do you have any issue with it, Mark? Do you think that that should have stopped long ago, or is there still value in that effort?
Well, to be honest, I'm not, totally up to speed on the details. My understanding, most of the money was spent trying to force the recounts in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, I believe, one other state, ran into a lot of problems. And in fact, it's sort of ironic that we have, all these congressional and FBI investigations into the, allegations about Russian interference with the elections. But yet when, Jill came forth at the request of a number of computer election experts showing there was evidence, pretty much the state stonewalled. Trump went to court to try to block it. Democrats did not do much. And unfortunately, it was really expensive. And in many cases, they ended up just doing what they did on Election Day. They were not willing to actually look at whether the computer codes were interfered with. Mm-hmm. In Wisconsin, I think particularly in Detroit, there may have been 80,000 ballots which people had cast but which the state had refused to count because they claimed that the electronic scanning equipment could not determine who they actually cast a vote for. Why they were unwilling to actually look at the ballots themselves to see if they could determine who the ballot was actually cast for. And these are mainly from Detroit, so probably, a good percentage of those went to the Democratic candidates. So we did raise a lot of money, but, we didn't really get the type of fair recount that we wanted. And yet at the same time, how much money and time has been spent looking at one, serious allegation that, Russia interfered with the elections, which should not have occurred. We should not be having foreign governments interfere with our elections. We all agree with that. But, what we were trying to do was to actually make sure that votes that Americans cast were counted. And certainly we're not convinced that was the case.
All right, so what I want to do is I'm going to read a listener's email who sent this morning, and I think that'll help tee up exactly what the Green Party is aiming to accomplish and the issues that Greens feel are most important. And it comes from a listener named Adam who writes, "Hi, Evan. I considered voting for Greens in the past, but we are now at too sensitive a moment in American history to play around with the next several elections. So my question for your panelists is this. Can your panelists honestly say that voting for Jill Stein was more sensible than voting for Hillary Clinton in states like Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania?" That's Adam in Rochester. There's a lot there. I'm going to start with Dave Sutliffadius, who's co-chair of the Monroe County Green Party. How would you answer Adam's question there, Dave?
I'm just talking about voting for Jill?
Yeah, well, let's just start. We'll start right there, and then we'll broaden out to, okay, you know, why Greens and not Democrats.
Well, okay, so we've been here. I've been in Green for about 20 years, and like Alex, I've run for office here in Rochester three different times, twice for school board and once for city council. And I've heard the same thing over and over again. Maybe next time, this election's too important. And we keep hearing that every year, no matter what level the election is. This year is always too important. There's always this boogeyman that we have to defend ourselves. We all have to rally the troops and make sure that we don't let this evil person, if it was Mitt Romney or whomever, it was always somebody who was the coming to like take our babies and whatever. So, well, okay, I'm being facetious, but
I take the point, though.
Yeah.
There's always a reason, an excuse given, you're
There's
saying.
Always
when people
an
say,
excuse.
This is not the year to vote for the Green Party.
Yeah, always. Well, no matter what state they're in, no matter what race it is, there's always a reason for it. And so I would say part of the reason that we're in a lot of this mess is because people don't vote for their values. If you ask folks who, you know, if you go down what they stand for, what they like, most of the time it aligns with the Green Party's 10 key values. And a lot of Greens who maybe not nationally, but when run in races that are local, that are nonpartisan, Greens win an amazing amount of time. I don't have the exact number, but the last time I heard, maybe Mark would know better than I would, I think it was at least 40%. I may be wrong on that, but a few years ago I had heard it was at least 40%. And when parties not involved in this, the things that we try to do actually speaks to people and they don't have a problem with supporting us at any level of government.
Okay, Alex White, on the same subject.
Well, Adam, like I, live in New York. We didn't live in Detroit or Michigan. We don't live in Michigan or Wisconsin or Pennsylvania or a swing state. My vote, in the vote of every Green in every state except Detroit, except Michigan, would not have made a difference. The problem I have is that, you know, you're just looking at one specific set of races, and you're saying if we don't rally behind the Democrats, well, I have gotten to vote for one non-Democrat locally in the last 12 years. And that was Tony Michiquet in the last mayor's race when I was also running. The only other candidates I can vote for are Greens. And if you blindly support your party, that will continue whether your party's Democrat or Republican. In Monroe County, almost 40% of races are contested between Democrats and Republicans. If that's okay with you to live in a one-party system, keep supporting your one party. If that's not okay, you have to start thinking about the fact that blind allegiance to a single party at every level is only going to lead you to this sort of conclusion in which you live in a one-party area, because the party uses their control at the national level, at the state level, gerrymander the areas so that they're very safe, so the two parties don't contest each other. And they're very happy to do this, and they're very happy to conspire on things like giving money to millionaires and Rochester to build housing for other incredibly rich people. And it happens at the county level, Comita approving everything the Democrats in the city agree upon to give away. And we are the losers in this system. And if Adam wants to stop being a loser, continuing to support the Democrats in these races, particularly when it's safe, like it was in New York, to vote for whoever you really wanted, getting higher levels for the Greens will actually make a difference. And, you know, I remember listening to Howie Hawkins on this show's predecessor with Bob Smith back in 2009. and someone called up with a question about fracking. And I want to say in this area, probably 3% or maybe 5% of the people knew what fracking was at that point and how he was making it a big issue. And what ended up happening is he got on a they got into the debate. It got brought up at the debate how he was the only person who knew anything about it. The governor realized this was an issue and didn't want to offend people. And we ended up getting fracking banned in New York. And without a political candidate threatening the Democrats on an issue that's incredibly important, I don't believe we would have gotten the same result that we ended up getting. Because both Democrats and Republicans are very sensitive to issues people care about that are only being brought up by these so-called third parties.
And let me follow up with Alex before I turn back to Mark here. You know, I think Dave is bringing up a point that says everyone's always crying wolf. This is the year that you can't vote for the Greens because of X. You know, it's too important, et cetera. Is this the time that the wolf is finally here for progressives in this country? In other words, winning the midterms and winning the White House, do listeners like Adam have a point? Is this a time where the focus must be, at least from a progressive standpoint, making sure that the political right does not continue to hold power?
So you're saying the sky is finally falling?
I'm asking if the sky is actually falling.
Yeah, this time.
This time. Yeah. Finally the sky is falling? Is that the... I mean...
You don't think Trump is the sky falling? You don't think the...
You know, no. he's been in office now for a year and a half.
Yeah.
Okay? And we've gotten basically Republicans... wet dream of a tax bill.
That's an interesting phrase. Trump's a family show, Alex.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But that is really where we're at here, is that what else has he accomplished? He's tried to do a lot of things. He talks a lot of bad stuff, but it isn't getting through. And in the end of his term, you know, we heard the same thing with Bush. The sky has finally fallen. You know, if we don't resist George Bush, America will be destroyed and we'll be living in a fascist empire.
But okay. I hear what Evan's saying. And so, all right, look.
But did we?
No, but this could, he's asked, some folks are thinking maybe this could be the one. So, look, Trump is just a symptom of this. Look, if he gets impeached, which is, it may still happen, but it's going to take some more time. If this still happens, the framework of what is going on is still going to be, has been here and will continue to be here. So thinking just because Trump goes, well, then you got Mike Pence coming in, and that's not, you know, that's going to be bad on a different, just my opinion, just as bad, but in a different kind of direction. So
there's nothing uniquely dangerous or about Donald Trump to you.
Well, let's talk about some issues here. Let's talk about global warming, okay? Did Obama do something to change global warming and to set us on a different course? Let's talk about the income inequality. Did anything great happen in the last, 50 years to stop the spread in income inequality, whether it's a Democrat or a Republican? Let's talk about, we can go through issue by issue. We're not winning. If you're a progressive, okay, who's ever in the White House, who's ever in Congress, we're not winning. And whether we're slowly losing or whether we're losing more dramatically, we're still always losing. So you're not presenting me, the Democratic Party is not presenting me as a progressive, an option to win.
And Obama's first 2 years is an example of that.
Yeah.
When they had the Congress, the House and the Senate.
I'm sure Obama would, and I think probably the members of the Congress at the time would argue they got the best health care they could get given the dynamics in their view. And again, I'm not characterizing it as best or worst or whatever. I'm just saying that that's what they would say. Given all the dynamics, they got what they could get with health care. They passed a surplus bill that they felt was necessary, and that they passed a financial reform bill that was the best they could do. You don't think so?
No. When asked in a debate, Obama was asked what the first thing he was going to do, and he said he was going to sign the Employer Free Choice Act, which was a bill that said if people working for a company want to unionize, and the company will have to, and I'm simplifying this a lot, the company will have to have an election within 2 years rather than pushing it off indefinitely, and it would provide more rights for unionization. One of his first acts in office was not to sign this. which had, you know, been, which was presently being held by a veto, by a filibuster in the Senate, which could have been broken, but his first act wasn't to sign this, but to trade this away so he could get single-payer health care. So the unions lost there right off the bat, and then we didn't get single-payer health care.
He took it off the table.
Right.
Right, the negotiations.
So we just lost, whether we got the best health care we could get, we lost a potential good pro-labor law, which presently still, if all the workers in a company want to unionize, the company can still put off the election indefinitely. They can schedule it 100 years from now, that election. And that's the law that they were trying to change, and we're still at this terrible place, which was taken off the bill so we wouldn't get, you know, and we didn't get what was taken off for.
I want to turn back to Mark Dunley, and as I do that, I want to tell our listeners, and I will particularly appeal to listeners who self-identify as Democrats who may have questions or comments for our guests from the Green Party. Are you swayed? Are you persuaded? Are you thinking about making a change and voting Green? 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. Mark, I'm sure you've been asked since 1991 and the founding of the Green Party here that you were involved with. I'm sure you have been asked, aren't you really just a Democrat, you know, further left? Why are you not a Democrat? What's the most common answer you give to that, Mark?
Well, basically we have two corporate parties in America that represent, you know, the 1%. They basically follow the same fundamental principles. We hate Trump, of course, much more reactionary, much more overtly racist. But, you know, the reality is that Clinton, you know, was not going to do the type of issues we're concerned about. And, you know, one of the things, you know, we talked about the health care policy. Now, remember when Obama came in, the Democrats had a majority in the House, the Senate, and in the White House. And they still were not able to deliver on their message. In fact, their message became, yes, we have a majority, but majority's not big enough. So the solution is we're going to continue the war in Iraq, continue the war in Afghanistan. We're not going to do single-payer health care. Vote for more Democrats. That's always their answer. We're not Republicans. Vote for Democrats. Now, the Obamacare was initially called Romney Care. It was basically a policy written by the insurance companies to strengthen the role of the insurance companies. When all my Democratic friends, you know, ran away from single payer to do the public option, they pledged that the one thing they would insist upon is they would never allow an insurance mandate to take place. And yet, you know, 18 months later, when Cuomo signed the insurance mandate, these same Democratic leaning, you know, liberal groups all said it was an historic victory, even though they got what they said they most opposed was an insurance mandate. And if you look at the last gubernatorial election, issues that Howie Hawkins raised, 15-hour, you know, minimum wage get picked up, you know, the ban on the fracking of New York State. Previously, back in the early 2000s, Jason West, as mayor of New Paltz, Green Party mayor, Rebecca Rotzler began to perform same-sex marriage. That's now the law of the land. You know, we've been talking about legalization of, you know, marijuana into the drug wars for decades. Now that seems to be getting momentum. A lot of criminal justice reforms. I totally agree with what Dave and Alex said, but particularly on climate change. You know, so the Republicans are the climate deniers and the Democrats are the climate evaders. They're nowhere close to doing what is necessary to avoid catastrophic climate change. And, you know, the Obama administration, you know, did some stuff good on promoting, you know, renewable energy. But, you know, you had Clinton as Secretary of State being the salesman for the fracking industry across the planet. And now the United States is the biggest producer of fossil fuels, you know, on the planet. That's not a solution. We see the same problem at the state level. In New York State, we only get 4% of our electricity now from solar and wind, way behind, you know, other states. And that is because the Cuomo administration relies upon, you know, adjusting the market forces rather than saying no more fossil fuels in New York State, no more, you know, fossil fuel infrastructure, no more natural gas. The governor wants to spend $100 million to put two new gas turbines, state money, into a low-income neighborhood in Albany that has been subject to pollution for a century in order to power the Empire State Plaza. Why isn't he doing renewable energy? We get the rhetoric from the Democrats as better than the Republicans, but what they deliver is nowhere close to their rhetoric.
All right. So, listeners, I've got a lot of questions and comments that have already come in for our guests. You're hearing Mark Dunley on the line, who's the Green Party candidate for New York State Comptroller. And in keeping with the consistency of this program, Mark will be on separately for a conversation about his comptroller race, as we invite all candidates for offices of that level to do that. But right now we're talking about what the Green Party is in 2018 and the goals for the future. So Mark's on the line with us. Alex White, the treasurer of the Monroe County Green Party and the co-chair of the Monroe County Green Party, Dave Sutliff Adius, is in studio with us. Don writes to us and says, Evan, would you have the panel sum up the Green Party position on immigration, legal and illegal? I'll start with, I guess I'll start with Dave on that. I mean, generally speaking, how do Greens feel about, what should the restrictions be on immigration?
Well, first off, we do not believe there's any such thing as an illegal person. I guess if you had to use a label, I don't feel comfortable speaking for the entire party on this. Undocumented, me personally, I'm not a big fan of documentation either. That has some connotations in terms of showing papers and things like that. But there should be definitely a clearer and more humane path to citizenship. And the direction we're going now is definitely inhumane.
Would you put any restrictions on immigration?
Light. Okay. I'm not a border person.
Okay, Alex.
I like people to fill out paperwork. I like to know who's here. I mean, if you're asking me, I mean, I can't understand our present immigration policy, and I don't understand this whole illegal. Making people illegal is ridiculous. We need a path to citizenship, and if people come here, it's nice if they start that immediately rather than putting it off. And so I think there should be a very open immigration policy into America.
Would you put any restrictions on numbers annually?
No.
No restrictions?
No.
Okay. No, not on numbers.
Mark Dunley.
Certainly the Greens are the most progressive on the immigration issue. In fact, we have long advocated, like they do in Europe, that anybody who lives in a community should be able to vote in local elections, not national elections. The one thing I get concerned about is overpopulation. That is a concern.
An environmental concern, Mark?
An environmental concern, the amount of, you know, particularly because we use so much resources here in the United States that we, you know, impact negatively upon the rest of the world. And, you know, of course, part of the solution is to actually have real fair trade policies that begin to live up the standard of living for people in other parts of the planet.
Right.
So there isn't the need, you know, to migrate. Most people don't really want to come, you know, to the United States. They're coming to the United States because they don't have much economic opportunities in their own home country, or they're fleeing in violence. Violence is just often perpetuated by the United States. In fact, it was Hillary Clinton who, you know, helped engineer the coup in Honduras that resulted in this massive, you know, migration, particularly of children, out of Honduras into the United States to try to flee to violence that Clinton, as Secretary of State, had promoted. And, you know, she probably deported more children than any previous, you know, Secretary of the State. So, you know, I'm not sure I'm willing to go to completely open borders, but, you know, certainly, you know, we support the DREAM Act, you know, right to immigrants to get licenses, but, you know, I do think there is a population environmental concern that one also wants to look at, and that can be solved if we really were willing to invest in things like the Millennium Project of the United Nations to lift up the standard of living around the planet.
All right. So listeners, again, if you got more emails, connections at WXXI.org, 844-295-TALK to join the conversation. Here is an email from CJ who says, the sky is falling for the next several decades now. The federal judge appointments are marching through and dividing is not helping. Dave, I'll start with that. There's an argument that says the sky is falling just because of the judgeships alone.
You're not going to solve that with just putting all Democrats in. I feel that there's going to have to be some more movement in an activist vein for our judicial system to be cleaned up. There's going to need to be some changes in terms of the systemic structure of how of our judicial system for that to be able to be at a place that is more, coming back to the word humane, but humanist, I guess maybe is a play on that. Look, the Republicans have been holding up judicial process appointees for years, and if the Democrats aren't going to do the same thing in the same way, if they feel it's that important, then I'm back to the Democrats were in office that had the whole the Congress and Senate and the presidency, and the Republicans were able to block a lot of appointments as well. So I don't think sweeping all Democrats in is going to take care of that.
Well, let me also ask the question about what the Green Party is trying to do now. Not just on the issues, we'll get back to the issues in a second, but in terms of actually running and maybe even winning some races. I mean, one of our guests, Mark Dunley, who's on the line, is running for New York State Comptroller. Of course, Alex and Dave have run for local offices. And Alex, I think for years you've been talking about not just being top down, not just saying, well, who's going to run in the national race once we get a good presidential candidate that will be sort of the wave that ripples and inspires, as opposed to can we win town council? Can we win on school boards? Can we win mayoralships? What do you think the Green Party should be doing, and do you think that's actually happening here?
Well, here I'm very pleased and proud of the local Green Party because we have run candidates consistently. Last year we ran a town councilman in East Rochester moving out of the city for the first time in years candidates in outlying towns, and we have consistently run candidates in the city of Rochester, and I think this is absolutely essential. Local politics should really be without party. And unfortunately, party has dominated it to the point that they can get away with doing anything they want. And we, the public, are the losers in this situation. And the local Green Party has also concentrated their efforts here locally on trying to at least make people aware of what's going on in your local government and how bad things actually are, and to provide options so that even when we lose, the people who beat us can steal them, and we will be better off.
Which has happened.
If I could jump
in.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I've gotten about 8 tweets from Jill Stein. I'm sorry, not tweets, direct messages. She says that the Daily Beast article was a real fabrication and a hit piece, and most of the information in it is not true, especially about where the money was spent on speeches and stuff like that.
Okay.
On the federal judgeship issue, I am an attorney. One of the things, I read a number of articles that actually during the Clinton administration, Bill Clinton, comparing the federal judgeships appointed under the Clinton administration to the judge appointed under Reagan and Bush, they basically had the same philosophical bearing, except that the Clinton appointees, tended to be more conservative on economic issues than the Bush and Reagan appointment. So that's another fallacy. I have been an elected Green Party official. I admit I was cross endorsed after I petitioned my way on the ballot by the local, Democrats in my town. Served on the town board for 4 years, managed to actually cut taxes every year I was in office because I did crazy things like put the insurance contracts in the town out for bid, which then resulted in the chairman of the county Democratic Party going to federal prison for 2 years because it turned out he was skimming money off of the town insurance contract without anybody, knowing it. And as I think as Dave pointed out earlier, we do win about, you know, a third of the elections we run across the country in local elections because they tend to be nonpartisan. So the reality is we've had hundreds of people who've been elected, you know, mayors and school board and town officials. And so, in fact, we do have a track record out there. We just in my own community north of here just elected somebody in South Glens Falls to the village board. So, you know, we've always done those local elections. Unfortunately, we tend to get more attention after presidential races, just because that's when the national media pays attention. But we do try to be an incubator for different ideas. As I pointed out earlier, you know, it was Jason West, who was mayor of New Paltz back in, 2002, that said, I'm going to start performing same-sex marriages. Unfortunately, he was opposed by the Democrats, particularly Elliot Spitzer, who was attorney general at that time. They shut it down, so it took us another 7 years to win that. And, in fact, a lot of the Democratic lean-in gay rights groups opposed what Jason was doing. Say, oh, you're going too fast. Slow down. You know, and I think one of the things, you know, our campaign slogan is demand more. You know, that, you know, we need to require, particularly the Democrats, because they try to compete for our votes, to say, you need to deliver. You need to step up your game, and you need to do more about dealing with income inequality. You need to deal more about racism. You need to do more about economic development, not just corporate welfare, where we throw billions of dollars to politically connected firms that make campaign contributions, but grassroots up, where the community gets to decide, here are the type of firms that we're going to want in our community for a full employment economy, and let's invest in the infrastructure that will support those firms rather than just having this bidding war between companies. We have a different vision of how the world, you know, should be managed, and we just think that Democrats and Republicans both serve the needs primarily of the very wealthy, and that's why, you know, one thing New York State does lead the country in is economic inequality, and that needs to change. And we need to deal with the problem that we have probably the most segregated housing and school systems in the country. And that's an issue that seldom gets talked about. Now, if you want to improve the education system, yes, you've got to put more money into the inner city schools and into the rural schools, but you need to end the segregation of the school system, which is so dominant here in New York State.
Oh, I know our former candidates and Green Party members in studio agree with that. Let's talk about how, though, because we are going to have listeners. And I don't want to broad brush paint here, but certainly more conservative listeners are going to hear that and say, well, you know, Dave, he's describing a system that it's not enforced segregation. People are allowed to live where they want. What's the Green Party talking about? What are you going to do about that? Dave.
I'm sorry, you said they're not forced to live in a certain place? That's actually not true. Redlining and the way, the way real estate is marketed and how loans are given. Go ahead, Alex. You can jump in because I'm stammering with this.
I've heard from many, many listeners. Generally conservative, but not always.
I have heard, I don't know where to start with this. It's almost funny to me. I was having trouble not laughing through that question. Much of our segregation is based economically now, and so we'll talk about Cobbs Hill Village at the moment. They're putting in new apart. They want to put in new apartments there that are going to take the rent from $330 to $711.
Not for all of the.
No, but I mean for the majority of the. At the moment, half the tenants pay $330, and all but 16 people will be able to pay a rent under $400. And in the new apartments, it'll go to $711 instead of $508 for everyone else. And that's not the same. You're looking at a different people, and being poverty. Is a result of historical processes, has been concentrated in black and brown people. We now have a situation that they are much poorer, and as we build housing that's much more expensive, they end up being priced out into different areas. And this housing is only going up Well, partially only going up because we're giving it tax breaks, we're giving it public subsidies, we're making it so that the rich housing is paying no taxes and received money, like Tower 280 got $12 million of city money in the end, and 30 years of tax breaks, zero taxes on that property, and rents are over $2,000 on average for apartment. You're not going to get a whole lot of people of color in that apartment because of the income breakdown in Rochester by, and there was just a story in the newspaper about this, how black people in Monroe County make substantially less than white people. And if you keep building this housing, it's not going to happen. And if we wanted to make a change, we could. It has to be done politically. And there's no effort politically in the Democratic Party to do anything but to throw more money at rich developers to put up this housing.
Well, in both parties. I mean, just the terminology of affordable housing is even being misused because they're using the average income to decide what's affordable for the entire county. When if you're building, quote, affordable, look at what's affordable in the Sibley building is...
$1,300 would be the affordable.
That's affordable. I can't afford that, and I have a semi-decent job. That's amazing. But because you take the average income of the entire county instead of a specific area of where it's being built, you're forcing people out. So, I mean, it's economically how you segregate. And then that exacerbates the school situation, which is a whole other show because I can fix the schools, actually.
You can fix the schools.
Uh-huh. I've tried when I ran for school board, but nobody wanted to hear it.
Well, I want to hear the elevator pitch then, and that's unfair, Dave, but I don't just mean the elevator pitch, okay. but you got a little time. Tell me.
So basically, more money's fine, and it's what you do with it. I am an educator. I am a teacher. And so no one gets into the profession to get rich. But making sure that teachers are paid so that they don't have to worry about other things because of the nature of the job, of how emotionally draining it is and how difficult it is important. It makes a difference. But the way you fix our schools, and I'll be honest with you, I think what's, quote, the best schools in our county that get listed in all of these public schools I'm talking about, that get listed in U.S. News and World Report and all that jazz, they need to be fixed too, because they tend to steer towards rote memorization and the type of learning that really does not help our kids think critically. And schools are boring. And the problem that our kids are having in schools, whether it's attendance or behavior in schools, is because what we're doing in the schools is not relevant to them. And when the students look out and their parents have been in poverty for generations, and they, you want me to jump through these hoops and there's nothing for me in the end? You know, one or two people are exceptions to the rule, but generally all the people in their family and people in their neighborhoods don't get out of that poverty. And you're just telling me doing this memorization stuff and spew it back on a test, and all you do is just drill this testing into me, and I'm supposed to trust that? No, if you change what we do in the schools on a day-to-day basis so that the kids feel that they're really welcome there and they're really wanted there, and the teachers are frustrated about this too, and you'll get better teaching when you stop mandating this stuff, I guarantee you, you're going to have better attendance, you're going to have more attentive students, there's going to be way less problems behavior-wise, and your graduation rate will go up, and then it'll have the ripple effect going on, whether how many go to college and et cetera, and how many workers are ready to actually work once they get it out of either high school or college.
Can individual teachers mitigate those challenges on their own right now? Or is it systemic?
It's totally systemic, without question. But I mean, you can have a teacher have an effect on a small number of students, but there's just too many students to do it for the majority of them. It's too overwhelming. Even if you have one exceptional teacher who tries to teach that way. Look, I've been run out of some of the best schools, quote, best schools in this county, because I didn't teach to tests. And I've had students who I've had 10, whatever years ago, come back to me who on social media and just say how important they thought my class was. But one person can't do it.
All right. Yeah. So let me try to sum up before I move to some other issues. For listeners who've been following along as we talk Green Party politics in 2018, the concern about modern segregation and segregated schools that Mark Dunley brought up, the solutions you're hearing proposed are, it starts with economic segregation, which goes to Alex White's point that if you really stop sort of creating the conditions for the de facto segregation that currently exists, then you will have less segregated schools and an opportunity, as Dave Sutliff-Adius proposes to change some of the dynamics within schools or the systemic way that we educate kids. So I guess with testing, what else is on that short checklist of changes you'd make in the schools?
Well, that's what drives everything. Well, it's data generation.
If I could jump
ahead,
I mean, the other thing on segregation is the issue of housing. And we need to make housing more affordable. And one of the strategies that Howie Hawkins spoke about, our gubernatorial candidate, is really increasing funding for public housing, but not the type of, you know, concentrated poverty housing, but more mixed income housing. You see more in Europe, where you build public housing that has poor people and working class people and middle class people living together, so the quality of the housing tends to be better, and it also creates more diversified neighborhoods. And if you have quality public housing and increase tremendously the funding for that, which has been slashed since the Reagan era, it also then begins to drive down the cost of housing for other people. And, you know, right now we have, you know, these housing programs, which basically gives massive subsidies to the developers, and the banks make a fortune off of the interest payments, and it's not making housing affordable. You know, and the rule of thumb should be people should not be paying more than 30% for their housing. And, you know, we need various forms of tax credits to make that, you know, occur. But we also need much more and better public housing than we presently have. And that would really help on the segregation issue.
Mm-hmm. All right, I want to get to a few more of our listener emails. Some emails from listeners wanted to know, what's the Green Party stance on a federal minimum wage? Now, the fight for 15 started in 2012 when a couple hundred fast food workers walked off the job in New York City demanding union rights and $15 an hour. So if you go back to 2012, today, $15 in 2012 today is worth $16.33. So if we're actually attaching to inflation, it should be the fight for $16.33. And I'm sort of cheeky with that. But as the time goes on, you can't be the fight for 15 forever. Alex White, what should the federal minimum wage be?
We need to stop talking about minimum wage.
Okay.
I'm tired of it. Yep. We need to talk about living wage.
Yeah. Yep.
Because minimum wage is a constant fight. Every year, because there's inflation, minimum wage needs to go up. And the long as we set a minimum wage at 15 or 16 or whatever the rate is, we're going to have to do that fight again next year.
But you're going to attach it to inflation.
Let's make it a living wage. Let's link it to the housing costs in the area. Let's link it to the market basket cost of goods in an area. And let's make the wage constantly linked to known indicators, and we could even link it to family status and other things, making it so that people could afford to support their family on the money that they're making.
And so what would that look like in Rochester?
With the housing, well, with the way the housing costs are in Rochester at the moment, the city has had a living wage legislation based on that since 2001, and their number's $13.50 at the moment, which is probably a little low.
Yeah, and Alex, I would say too that you can, if you really want to keep a minimum wage, that concept, we'd be okay with it as well if there's a universal basic income involved.
Okay.
That would help mitigate that problem.
Yep.
Okay. So living wage, not minimum wage. And Mark Dunley, Greg emailed the program asking, are your guests anti-capitalist? Mark Dunley?
I would say yes.
Yeah.
That's a yeah, big fight within the Green Party. I running as an eco-socialist. Capitalism, you know, basically has resulted in gross income inequality. It is not environmentally, you know, sustainable. I always say, you know, I don't like big bureaucracies. I want decentralized. I want people to be able to control their own lives and their own decisions. But, you know, certainly we need to start with public ownership of, you know, the major parts of the economy, like transportation, you know, like energy. We need public banks. So clearly we're, I think, certainly in New York State, the Green Party is anti-capitalist. You know, other Greens, you know, differ that, you know, a bit. But, capitalism is not a solution.
Mark, if you remember, at the last presidential convention as well, there was a platform plank brought up by the Young Greens Caucus and was passed that was anti-capitalist. So nationally, I believe our platform has that in it now.
Right. Yeah, Alex?
I believe that's true.
Yeah.
No, I'm not anti-capitalist.
Says the business owner.
Yeah, I have a business. I mean, but
right, you can keep yours, Alex.
Right, thank you. But I believe capitalism has its place, and I believe it needs to be regulated because the essence of capitalism is this competition, and in competition you have winners and losers. And in almost all cases, that means that the public is a loser. And so it needs to be heavily controlled and heavily regulated to make sure that we, the public, are not being taken for a ride at the expense of other people who are profiting off the lack of regulation. And environmental concerns are a big one. You know, companies make more money for polluting and getting away with it, so they do. And then we, the public, are forced to clean it up. That is not capitalism. That's externalizing costs. And only government can prevent that.
See, Evan, we have a big tent. We let Alex in.
Barely, it seems.
All right, well, let me get a couple other comments in from listeners via email. Teresa emails to say, Evan, thanks for the show today. I'm a registered Democrat that often votes outside of party lines. I'm offended by the Democratic and major party idea that votes are being divided by so-called third parties. That argument uses the false assumption that my vote will always go to Democrats. If I'm not inspired or believe in the cause, then maybe I don't vote, or my vote doesn't belong to the Dems. Thus, the division of votes is at least somewhat a straw man argument. I'm so sick of that line, my vote is mine.
The times that I've run and even, well, more when I've run, because it's easier when you talk one-on-one with someone in door-to-door and whatever, talking about your own vision and your own platform, and you have people who are really on board with what you're saying, and that's awesome, Dave. Yeah, you know what? I want to vote for you. And then they say, you're a Democrat, right? And I'll say, no, I'm a Green. And folks literally say, I'm sorry, I can't vote for you. Can't, not won't. Or I'm not interested, I can't. They use the word can't. So that means one of two things. It's either in their mind that legally they're not allowed to vote for anybody but the party they've signed up for, or two, they're so ingrained and with the party they identify with that they would they'd have some emotional breakdown or something if they were to try to vote outside their party. And okay. I don't know which.
All right, so I want to get...
If I could jump in this one.
Go ahead, Mark,
quickly.
Keep it tight.
Yes, we need most democracies in the world have proportional representation.
Yep.
If a party gets 10% of the vote, they get 10% in Congress. It's just United States, Canada, and England are the only few democracies without that, and it results in a very centrist-oriented, right-of-center, big-money-dominated politics. And the other thing is the Democrats are concerned about the spoiler vote. They should allow for ranked choice voting,
yes. You
know, 1, 2, 3, and if no one gets 50% on the first round, then the lowest person is discarded and you redistribute their votes. There are solutions to this if we want to make democracy work in the United States.
Ranked choice voting is a very interesting idea, and it's worth revisiting soon on a program here. We've already talked about it a bit in the past. Though I will ask, I take the point that saying, do Greens take away from Democrats is, offensive to some Greens and to some Democratic voters like Teresa. What about the idea, though, Dave, of Democratic Socialists of America, the Working Families Party? Is there enough of a fissure among more progressive-leaning parties that aren't Democrats that makes it harder?
Well, the Green Party doesn't participate in fusion voting. So when you have candidates running on more than one ballot line and folks say, well, that's my protest vote. I'm going to vote for the establishment corporate candidate just on a different line. And we're still getting the same thing. Our reason for not participating in fusion voting is a little bit different. It's a lot more because in the past, we've had a lot of other parties trying to mess with our line, having people come in who are not really Greens trying to run on our line. But really, also the effect of that is it's really not a protest vote. And those, quote, third parties, I would quote on that because they're really not espousing anything that's all that different. And look what almost happened to the Working Families Party. If the governor hadn't swooped in and taken that line, they might not even be a constituted party anymore.
All right, so let me get one more email from Barbara, and this will be a good way to close our program with all of our guests responding. About a minute each. We got to keep it tight here.
Okay.
And I've gotten a lot of emails like this. I'm picking Barbara's. So Barbara says, the perfect is the enemy of the good. The voters who were not blinded by the search for perfection rather than protecting the good could see that Donald Trump is a dangerous egotist with authoritarian tendencies. I would also like to see more progressive change, but I'm working on it through opposition to gerrymandering, encouraging priority-ranked voting, encouraging women to run for office, more public discussion of issues and other methods. Allowing and enabling an authoritarian personality to assume the presidency is not one of them. Thanks. That is Barbara. All right, Dave, about a minute apiece. Go ahead, Dave.
Locally, we have had members of the Green Party who have been very active, who have been tired of, quote, losing. And so they've left to go change things from the inside. And politically, we've never heard from them again in the community. That's
wow. Okay, Mark Dunley.
Yeah, let's impeach Trump. Trump's not who we want as president. Unfortunately, most Americans didn't want Hillary Clinton as president. She should be talking to the Democrats about why they conspired against, you know, Bernie Sanders. But, you know, I left the Democratic Party 30 years ago. I want to vote for what I believe in. We keep on voting for our fares. That's a Democratic mantra. We're not as bad as the Republicans. And the result has been is that this country has moved further and further and further to the right. We now have the Democrats to the right probably where Richard Nixon was 30 years ago. And that's a result of, you know, this lesser two evil strategy. You know, the Tea Party is willing to stand up for what they believe in. I don't understand why people call themselves progressives or are afraid to vote for what they believe in.
Okay. Alex White.
There's a lot of races other than the presidential race, mm-hmm. and they have tremendous importance on your life. And to give, in many of these races, party insiders are choosing who you get to vote for. And the only part, the only contest is between Democrats who object to that, who usually lose, and third parties. If we eliminate the third parties, we're giving more power to the insiders who control the party. Is that really what Barbara wants? I mean, the insiders were wrong. They chose Hillary Clinton to be the candidate for president, and they were wrong. Eliminating or not voting for third parties because you're afraid of splitting it is saying, let the insiders keep choosing wrong. And, you know, that's never going to get us to a progressive future.
All right. I want to thank our guests for their time. We've talked a lot about politics this week. Mark Dunley is the Green Party candidate for New York State Comptroller. And Mark, we'll talk to you separately in the weeks to come about that race. Thanks for taking the time today.
Thank you.
Alex White, treasurer of the Monroe County Green Party. Nice to have you back here. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you.
And Dave Sutliff-Adius, co-chair of the Monroe County Green Party. Dave, thank you.
Thank you.
And where online if people want to get more information about the Green Party, guys?
You can check out our local website, gpomc.org.
GPOMC.org.
Green Party of Monroe County.
Is there a national Green Party website?
GP.org.
GP.org. Thanks, guys. Our thanks to Tim George, the engineer. Is it happy birthday? Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Is it a round number? He's not saying. He's not answering. He's smart. You can never hear him speak through the glass. Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a lovely afternoon. We're back with you Friday on member-supported public radio.